Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 572, recorded Wednesday, May 30th, 2018. Chocolate blockchain. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Moogsoft. Reduce IT alerts and tickets by up to 99%. Visit Moogsoft.com to learn more and sign up for a demo. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we get together with two of the biggest, best known, smartest, best looking,
baddest.
We were talking about by this point.
Journalists in the Windows biz. That's Mary Jo Foley from ZDNet, all about Microsoft.com. Paul Thurrott from Thurrott.com. And man, when you get on Tech Meme as often as these guys do, you know you're in the royalty. You're in the top
What's
of the
Tech Meme.
What is that? What is that again?
That site. Yeah.
What is that thing?
Hello.
I guess it's officially summertime in Lower Macungie Valley. Paul had to turn on his air conditioning. Mary Jo did the same.
I turned mine off because it's very close to where I'm podcasting. Oh,
if you get hot, it's okay.
Okay.
And then, of course, you're going to shave Sriracha.
I know. He's like just laying around and panting. Dying. He's so hot.
So, I read Paul's article. Let me see if I get the quote here, because the salient quote is, but there it is, even worse than I had expected, much worse, irresponsibly worse. What are you talking about, Paul?
Well, last week we were talking, remember I used the phrase of the word chatter to describe the feedback Mary Jo and I get about, you know, everything in life, but Windows 10 in particular, and how with this release, that chatter has been overwhelmingly negative, or has been more negative than the last two releases, let's say. And I mentioned, I said, in some number of days, we will get some data to back up this assertion. The assertion being that this thing has rolled out a lot faster than the previous two updates. And that data came today in the form of an ad duplex report that said just that in less than 1 month, this thing is already installed on 50% of the Windows 10 PCs out in the world, which is an astonishing rate that is double that of the previous release and triple that of the release before that.
Wow. Yeah. Why do you think Microsoft's pushing this out so fast?
I mean, we can only guess, but I think they have a certain level of confidence because of the success they had with those previous two releases. But, I mean, again, you know, based on, I don't think it's fair to call this anecdotal data, but, you know, based on what we see, I assume, I don't want to speak for Mary Jo, but certainly based on what I see, this release is a lot more problematic than the last two.
No, I would agree with you now. After having talked about it last week, mm-hmm. I've heard from a lot of people.
Yep. Yeah. You can look, there were outliers. I just heard from some guy who said, I have X number of PCs. I haven't seen a blue screen since Windows 8.1, you know? So. Yeah. That's what a unicorn looks like. I'm sure he's not lying. I don't mean it like that, but that's an unusual experience. And I don't mean to suggest that 1803 is problematic for most people. I just mean that the rate of error, the rate of problem is higher than the last two. It might still be a small percentage. It's just that every single one of those people writes to me.
So this ad duplex, is it reliable, these numbers?
So this goes back to my fitness thing. You know, it's consistent to itself, right? And so what AdDuplex use, the data that they gather comes from store apps. And so there are large swaths of the population that probably are not getting measured here, especially in the enterprise.
Right.
But they've been doing this for years. And so we have three Windows 10 feature updates, major versions of data to look back on. They look at the different types of computers that are out in the world, so they always have interesting data around where computers from different manufacturers are and so forth. You know, back when Windows Phone was a thing, they had Windows Phone data as well. But this is interesting to me because, like, the way I phrase it is it's accurate to itself. I mean, it's as accurate as it's ever been, I guess.
It's consistent. But that doesn't necessarily mean when they say 50% of Windows 10 PCs in 1 month are running the spring update. That doesn't mean it actually is 50%. It's 50% of the ones they measure. However, when they say, when they do relative things like, you know, it's
twice as fast, three times as fast. Yeah. Right. That is, it's a fair measurement.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. But look at the chart in his report that's below that shows you specific kinds of devices that are being upgraded, right? That's kind of interesting to me because it shows that not all Surface devices have been getting it. And it kind of makes the conspiracy theorist in me come out thinking, hey, maybe Microsoft knows it's problematic, so they're not pushing it to the
That's interesting. That's not what I thought you were going to say. with the exception of Surface Laptop, most newer Surface devices are getting 1803 at a slightly faster rate than the rest of the industry, you know, than the average, right?
But not all of them, right?
No, not all of them.
I mean, Surface Books.
So Acer and Toshiba and Samsung significantly below average. Dell, Microsoft,
normal,
and
though,
MSI
right?
a bit significantly above average. HP's kind of, Lenovo and Asus kind of close to the average.
Yep.
But, I mean, and this is...
look, I got to say, you can pick any one of those bars. That level of deployment after less than 1 month is astonishing.
Yeah, even Asus, 38%.
Even if you pick the smallest number, that's a crazy high number for 1 month. Yeah. Remember, you know, well, you don't have to remember, but they have the data somewhere in here. It took 2 months, I think it was, for the fall creators update. And then I think it was 3 months for the creators update, the original creators update, to hit those numbers. And both of those things, you can go back and see what we said about it at the time or what we wrote about it at the time. They seemed like they were heading up pretty fast, you know?
Yep.
This is, I knew when we spoke last week that I would see data that kind of confirmed my contention that this is going up much faster than previous versions, because that's the chatter that we've received, that we've seen. I just didn't expect it to be this high. And I think it's irresponsible of Microsoft to pump this thing out so fast.
Why do you think they are?
They would disagree.
What is the...
Well, I think they want Windows as a service to just be something more commonplace and something accepted by users, you know, where they just are like, okay, there's an update, I'm going to take it.
Right.
And just expect that it's going to be okay, right? And
is some of this Apple envy? Is this some of it coming from
I don't know. I mean, how does Apple do this? I guess they sort of do this. Apple releases one major Mac OS release a year. They're not all that major, but I think that's the proper way for these things to go. This release is less major than the last two or three, if you will. It is also, we talked about this again, I have a hard time keeping straight what happens when, but they've changed the way the installer works so that most of it happens when you're online. And the period of time that you're down, which was one of those big complaints in the past, is much shorter. And so to the user, you could make the argument that Mary Jo just said, that this is basically just to a user, it's just another update. It may take a little longer to reboot, obviously, because it's installing stuff, but it's not as bad as it used to be. It's not even close. So in a real world, I mean, they're kind of moving it toward a model that would be more acceptable to people where you might notice it less.
Mm-hmm. Although I'm looking at a report from today, Softpedia. They said there are reports coming in of people who have configured their machines to block the update who are getting it. And that happened with the last update, too.
Really?
Not good.
Yeah. And they said Microsoft's investigating it. That's the part that makes people reticent to take this, right?
They'll have a handle on this problem within 2 or 3 months, folks. There'll be nothing to worry about. You just keep installing those updates and we will figure it out.
Yeah, I don't know. I get what they want to do, but I think pushing it really hard when it wasn't the most solid update is going to have the opposite effect, because people are going to be like, wait a minute. No, I don't want any of those updates.
Yeah.
Is it not the most solid update, though? Is that fair?
Solid, meaning like reliable?
Yeah.
No, it's not.
But maybe that we're seeing because of so many.
Well, okay, but this came up before. So, again, this is a very tight time frame. But let's say that for the previous update, for this many computers or this many as a percentage, to get that update on the previous version was 2 months. And for the one before that, it was 3 months. Mm-hmm. We never saw this level of problem with those updates over any number of months. So I think the issue I have here is that I don't know how they decide. I don't know. I have no insight into their internal metrics or the things that say go or no go on these updates. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. It just seems from the outside that there's been a loosening of the policy about whether some computer gets it or doesn't get it. And the problem is when you loosen it like that, I'm assuming it goes out to far more computers, and then you have far more problems. Mm-hmm. And now what? Do you back off? Do you stop delivering them to certain classes of computers because you saw problems? You kind of quietly fix them without saying anything. I don't know. I mean, I'm not making like allegations, but but this thing is heading out really fast.
Yeah. Yeah. Before you could kind of count on, like, their statement before this update was, we roll it out to machines with the best known likelihood of success first. So, and they made a big deal out of staggering the update. And they said, you know, if it gets pushed to you, it means we think it's likely going to be fine and you should take it. That's not how they're doing it this time. And so I've still not applied it on the HP Spectre because I'm like, you know what? It hasn't been like pushed to me yet. And I haven't gone to seek it because I'm afraid. I'm just going to
wait. That is, that right there is the one external publicly confirmed change that where they've actually said, this is, we're doing this now.
Yeah.
So we know of that. I don't think that's the only difference, but the notion, because even if you're seeking it, that suggests your computer would have received it naturally on its own on some time schedule, right? You know, just by seeking, they're not going to send you an update to a computer that will have problems, that they know will have problems.
Right.
We're never going to stop talking about this. I already feel that way. You just it's just going to go on and on and on. I feel bad that it's like this. Like weird because
things are getting fixed, right? Like they fixed the SSD thing now with Toshiba and Intel SSDs, and they pushed that fix out.
That's right.
But like we said last week,
they fixed that problem with my NUC.
Yeah, and you don't know when they did it, and you don't know, like, there's no fanfare, there's no blog post to the Windows blog. You know, it's just like, there's a little line somewhere in a support forum that said, and we fixed it, you know?
Yeah, and that's my problem, because the NUC thing is something I can monitor very easily. It's sitting next to me. I can look at it. I know what's going on with it. And fair enough. One day I turned it on, and I kept checking Device Manager because I'm an insane person. And one day it was just fixed.
Yeah.
You know, I reinstalled Windows 10, different versions, different editions, dozens of times. And then one day, it was just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they fixed it. And I don't know how they fixed it. I don't have any Intel software in there that updates drivers. I don't, you know, it just, something got fixed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it makes you wonder what's going to happen with Redstone 5, right? Because you're like, is it going to go back to being more reliable like previous two? Is it going to? Is this a new pattern where they're going to just push it even faster as we go forward with more updates?
Assuming that RS5 stays to the script that we saw with RS4, meaning it's not a tremendous major update with tons of venue, you know, sets will be the big thing instead of timeline this time, perhaps, whatever. I feel like they can get it to the point where this speed is semi-acceptable. I mean, they obviously have a certain level of confidence in the system that they have and in the results they've seen. And it's fair to say, for all of my complaining over the past couple of years about Windows as a service, those last two feature updates went out very reliably.
Mm-hmm. They did.
And stayed reliable. I should say, not just went out reliable. We're reliable. We're reliable over time. There was no weirdness that happened. Here comes the damn cat. that happened over time, you know. All right, let me just clear the cat a spot here so she can.
He wants to be part of it.
30 minutes. Yeah, we all want you to be part of it, honey.
He wants to weigh in on 1803, like everyone does.
How's your laptop doing? Yes. It's more chatter. By the way, with regards to Mary Jo said something again that I'll reference again, which was that notion of it will just be seen as an update. You know, I was looking at the new version of Chrome, which has some new PWA features, which are kind of interesting, and I wasn't seeing them on Windows. Mm-hmm. And so I opened up Chrome OS on a Chromebook, and I updated that. And when you update Chrome on Chrome OS, when you update the OS, you have to reboot that computer too. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting when you think, I mean, it's not the same. I mean, for sure, Chrome OS reboots very quickly, and they do a really good job of retaining your history because it's basically just a browser thing. You know, the browser window comes up again. It has the same tabs, whatever. But it's a reboot. I mean, and if their goal is to get it to be something like that, which I have to think it is, mm-hmm. it's never going to be perfect because Windows is just bigger, heavier, whatever. But, you know, they keep pushing more of that stuff to happen online, and then they minimize the reboot. Mm-hmm. It's not bad, you know, and I, you know, we could make the same argument about Windows versus, say, Chrome OS that I might make about Windows 10 on Intel versus ARM or Microsoft, or Chrome versus Edge, which is, yeah, this other thing has this advantage. But you get so much more over on this side that even though there are some minor disadvantages in this mm-hmm. case with regards to the time it takes to install a feature update, I mean, you know, real world to actual people, that might not matter as much. It might, you know, that downtime, I mean.
Right. Eliana makes a good point on Twitter. She said,
careful, Kat.
You know, the fact that the initial, some of the initial lockups for 1803 were because you had Chrome installed, that made it more apparent when things were going wrong because most people use Chrome, right? So if we were talking about problems with 1803 that happened, you know, because of something more obscure, mm-hmm. Maybe not as many people would have noticed, but because it was affecting like people's mm-hmm. Bluetooth headphones and speakers and Chrome, I think it was more obvious.
Are we going to give them a low grade because the problem was with something popular? I mean, I don't remember which version it was, the anniversary update maybe, when you plugged in a Kindle and the thing would blue screen, right? Mm-hmm. Are you telling me that not a single insider tested this and saw this and reported it? Actually, we know they did. But, you know, that somehow the instances are, I don't know if it was the number of reports. God, seriously.
He wants to do the meow cast. Can you hear that?
I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Yikes.
Oh, I have no doubt.
It's not scaring him.
would eat me if it was big enough.
That's a big cat you got there.
That's right. It is. Drink the rum, fatty. Fall asleep on the couch. We'll get you.
Give him a little Benadryl. It'll fix him right up.
Is that what you do? You give Sriracha some Benadryl before the show?
Oh, yeah. This is the new thing. I've been putting it in a little pill pot holder.
You're drugging your cat?
He needs it, guys.
Yeah, I don't. This cat almost died a couple weeks ago when I was in Chicago.
Oh, dear.
Because it's tried to kill itself a number of times, actually. I'm not sure if it's not happy here or whatever it is. But, you know, it ate the string from a roast one time. It got all tied around its intestines. Yeah. It's got outside. Okay. It's done all kinds of
stuff. Did it have to have surgery?
Oh, yeah. $1,800 worth. But,
yikes. My God.
So this past week when I was in Chicago, it ate the dog's medicine. And it's never been tested on cats, but it was foaming at the mouth and having seizures. So they brought it into the hospital. And they actually had to bring it to a different hospital where it could be monitored overnight because they didn't want to leave it. I know. So my wife calls me and she's like, I don't mean to disturb you, but
the cat.
We might be down one animal.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Anyway, she lived because, you know, nine lives and whatnot. But
Yep.
Right.
So we got all the other cats in the audience, though, getting excited now. So.
Exactly.
Finally, a show for us.
Mm-hmm. Great.
We're like still the waiting BBC for Call of Duty cats.
There always should have been a Call of Duty cat. There should have been.
They just showed the next game they have dogs again. It's like, guys, when are you going to wake up?
Come on.
A battle cat. Special armor.
Ferocious.
Ferocious battle cat.
Nobody wants to screw with a cat. Like, most people probably feel like they could take down a dog if they had to, but if there was like a dog-sized cat.
Oh, no.
You would be screwed.
It's called a mountain lion.
Yeah, it's over. Yeah. That's a game over.
A person got killed by a mountain lion. And
can climb a tree. Yeah, there's no way you could escape from this thing.
No.
Microsoft Edge's battery life advantage. We talked about this last week.
Yes.
Am I on last week's show? Nope.
I don't think so, did
we? No. Well, we were talking about whether, you know.
Oh, we were talking about Mary Jo had seen lackluster battery life and Edge on that NBX2.
Yeah.
So what's happened since then? Remember, every Windows version, I think dating back to possibly the fall update, you know, years ago, Microsoft comes out with this little video, and they usually write a blog post where they say, we're running a battery life test on Chrome, on Edge, and on Firefox. And one time on Opera, I don't know, they stopped doing that, but Edge always had a dramatic battery life advantage over the other browsers. But the thing is, like, the latest one, I don't have the number in front of me, but the advantage it has now is, like, not quite single digits, but I think it was 14%, something like that, over Chrome. Mm-hmm. We're kind of running out of reasons to use Edge at this point. I mean, if it's only, you know, back in the day when it was like a 50% advantage, you'd be like, obviously I want to use this thing when I'm on a plane. My God, like, that's incredible. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, okay, so I'm going to get 12 hours of battery life instead of 14. Like, I'm just going to use the browser that works.
You know, I will say, since last week's show, I got another NVX2, this one with Windows 10S instead of Pro. And so here's the weird thing. At first, with both the Pro and the 10S version, my battery life was horrible. Like, I was like, are they really saying this thing has great battery life? Since then, I've recharged both of them a couple of times, and battery life is way better now.
Interesting.
Right. Maybe you just need to be conditioned or something.
Yeah, it feels like that.
Like leather.
But
when you buy a baseball glove.
To the point about Edge, Edge is not good on either of these. It's slow. And I know Microsoft has all this telemetry data and reports, and they've talked about all this stuff about how fast Edge is, how much faster it is than Chrome in opening sites and running sites. And I can tell you that it's not the case on either of these devices.
You should go into Windows Update and just see what happens.
They're both running 1803. They're both running 1803.
Yeah, yep. I put my X2 got 1803 this week too.
Yeah.
Oh, it did.
And it works fine.
And naturally?
No blue screen. I don't know. What does naturally mean? I probably looked at the updates.
You did look for updates. But it did give it. I mean, it shouldn't give it unless it's ready for it.
Oh, really?
In theory.
Oh, really?
In theory.
Yeah.
Well, probably.
All of my Windows machines now are 1803. But again, I think, I kind of compulsively look at updates, so I don't know.
Yeah. That's normal, Leo. Don't let anyone tell you differently.
It's not normal.
I thought I was done with the cat, but I'm not.
He's back. He heard you tell his story.
I know, honey. And then we got home and Kelly said, the cat had a bag wrapped around her head this morning when I got up. And I'm like, she just got back from the hospital.
Curiosity killed the cat.
She's got those little shaved legs because they had a
satisfaction
injector with something. She looks ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, the poodle cut. Oh. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Cats. We're all cat owners here on the show.
We are.
Yeah. Some of us more willingly than others.
We get it right.
Some dragged along. Some going along for the fun.
Some putting bags over the heads of their cats.
Yeah.
No, they
Paul,
did it to themselves.
Did you do that? Yeah, really?
Mm-hmm. Well, if I was going to bag an animal, it would be the dog. But
come on.
Okay, guys.
Redstone 5 sounds like a rocket, but it's not.
But it's not. Yeah, this thing is kind of going through the insider build paces very slowly. Like the last couple builds, there's been a couple, I think, smallish tweaks to Redstone 5 in the latest test build. So the most recent one for client came out May 24th. It's build 17677. And it mostly has updates to the Edge browser in it, but like kind of small things, right? Like users can see top sites in the jump list on the Windows taskbar, settings and more menu in Edge is being redesigned. I don't know, like kind of, okay, well, like little tweaks.
That last one's kind of interesting to me because there's been a push recently in some of the apps in Windows 10 to make them more, I would call it kind of command dense. That's maybe not a great word, but they're fitting more stuff into the menu. So if you look at the way it's laid out, there's a lot less white space between each of the menu items. And it starts to take on the feel of a more professional app. And so that menu compared to, say, the similar menu in Google Chrome, we're kind of similar looking now. Whereas before, I think the Edge menu had more of a, not cartoonist, this big kind of touch-friendly type things.
I think holdovers they're starting to, from Windows 8. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of walk away from that a little bit.
Yeah. This one I didn't really know what it is, but Microsoft's adding support for IPv6 to KDNet. I don't know what KDNet is.
I have no idea what that means. Don't know.
So if you do know, listeners, that's in this build also.
I bet they do. I bet they do too.
Yep.
The big stuff, though.
And then they talked about the new LTE networking stack that they're implementing through Net Adapter framework. And so it's like kind of stuff under the covers and a few smaller tweaks and a bunch of fixes. That's what's in these builds right now.
Yeah. This last one didn't have a lot in the way of sets, but it seemed, if you go back and look over the last several insider builds for RS5, clearly sets is the focus. There's a lot of hand tweaking for individual app types to get them to work well within sets, especially Microsoft Office, of course, because that's the probably the big one for people. And then, the built-in apps like File Explorer, Notepad, and so forth.
But you know what? When we were at Build, I kind of wondered if they were hinting that sets wasn't going to make it into Redstone 5. Because remember, Joe Belfiore said, when will sets be in Windows 10?
Well,
when it's a great experience.
I'd like to take credit for that. that hedging, if you don't mind. Because I did complain a lot last year when they made promises they didn't keep. I think that was just a face-saving gesture that,
You do. I don't think he was hinting it could be delayed?
I would be shocked if sets was not the marquee feature of RS5.
Wow, the marquee
feature. I bet my career on it. No, I don't know.
I'm going to say I'm not totally positive sets is going to make it into the next version.
Okay.
What's the marquee feature of 1803? Timeline?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, and Fluent?
No.
No, it's Timeline.
That thing Mary Jo can't see? Yeah, that?
Yeah. Fluent. Yeah. Fluent.
It makes sense. You'd have one big... Because, honestly, these updates aren't that big a deal.
They're not. And, we get excited because we care about Windows and we want to see kind of where Microsoft's taking it, what's going on with it, but... To the average person, if you show them 1709, 1803, and you're like, okay, what do you see that's different? What do you notice? They'd probably be like, nothing.
But you know what? I want it to be like that.
Yeah, No, you really do.
I really do. I really do because I think that's important for users that there's an easier transition, that it's not a transition.
That's true.
But if you go and seek out stuff, if you want to go find out what's new or look around, and you're rewarded by finding some small changes, I think that's a nice experience for people. Whereas the people that just want to get in and get going are not interrupted by nonsense.
Yeah. You don't want to have a Windows 8 thing happen again where you see this operating system and you're like, what?
Yeah. the Windows 8 thing I always reference was that Charms thing. People would trigger it somehow. They would see it appear and they'd be like, what's that? And then it would disappear and they wouldn't know how to do it again because they did it by mistake in the first place. It was the worst possible user interface for a computer.
It was. KDNet, guys, the feedback is coming in. Kernel debugging over the network.
That's VM. Interesting. Yes. That's kind of cool.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you, listeners.
Cobra in our chat room is saying that he doesn't think sets will be that great because it only works with store apps. Is that true?
No. But I believe the way it's going to work is it will work with store apps, and then it will work with some selection of desktop apps.
Apps have to implement it as an SDK, or
Yeah, I mean, obviously the built-in stuff in Windows 10 is getting it, and those are desktop apps like Notepad and File Explorer. That's important. This is the thing.
Photos, so Photos is getting it, right, I think.
Well, Photos is a store app. The Microsoft Office apps that you would probably use with this are probably store apps only. I haven't really looked into it yet. Mm-hmm. But right before the holiday weekend, I tweeted something about wanting to talk to developers, which is something I really do want to do. I was thinking after build, you know, what is the situation for the day-to-day Windows developer, you know, whatever that means today? Mm-hmm. How do they view what Microsoft is adding to the SDK? Do they ever use – is it meaningful, you know?
We should this past this week show. Alone. Why don't we get a half dozen developers or
– That'd be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I'll talk to guys and then I'll pick a few who, you know, are representative of each angle or whatever.
Yeah, because there's obviously all different things. People
yeah. Do. I mean, I right. So, you know, whatever Microsoft or Windows developer means today is kind of unclear. But this feature, for example, if what he's suggesting is, I think it is what he's suggesting, that you as an application developer would have to add something to your code using the Windows SDK to take advantage of this new feature that's only available in the latest version of Windows 10. Who on earth would ever do this? Mm. You know, who would do this?
Yeah.
The other people it would be interesting to bring in would be like line of business developers who were pretty excited about what Microsoft announced at Build, which is, hey, we're going to start supporting WinForms, right, and WPF with .NET Core. That was like a really big announcement there. And
because
I think
that's
people
something
who thought,
that runs everywhere, right?
Right.
That's
and
why
people,
that's a big
people
deal.
Yeah, people have been afraid that Microsoft was just going to say to them, you know what? So if you don't want to come with us on UWP journey as it is, we're just going to leave you behind, which would have been ridiculous if that's what Microsoft said. But up till now, that was kind of what they said.
I've said this before, but I feel like Microsoft kind of lost the developer base a long time ago, like a really long time ago, like Longhorn long time ago.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, and that... The most exciting, I don't, for lack of a better word, you know, new app development or whatever is occurring on mobile, obviously, and on the web, you know, and that doing things that are Windows specific aren't necessarily super interesting to anybody anymore. But that said, don't get me wrong. I don't go into this looking to prove this assertion that I have. I would be very interested in talking to people who are successful creating new applications for Windows that may or may not be sold through the store or whatever it is. I'd love to hear from those people. I'm not trying to skew this toward my personal worldview or whatever. I really want to understand this thing because obviously there's always this great argument you can make with app stores and so forth, like Apple and Google's. They're so big, you kind of get lost in the mix now. And that, you know, one of the promises of Windows Phone for a little while, one of the promises that they still say for Windows 10 today is that you have an opportunity here to have much more of a showing because there's a lot less competition as a developer. So it's kind of a theory, but there must be people out there who have seen success solely targeting Windows. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I'd like to hear from them for sure.
You got to bring in somebody who's doing a PWA, right? That has to be part of it too.
Oh, for sure. And one of the other things I meant to do was talk to some of the guys from Microsoft about PWAs. So I ran into them very briefly at the show at Build. I went back to talk to them and they were gone at that time. So I just missed them. But I will, you know, I want to talk to those guys too and see what's going on there because that itself has not progressed the way I had kind of expected / hoped, you know, before what this version of Windows 10 was released.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the idea though. I think it would be fun to have a bunch of developers on, all different kinds, just like talking about, okay, build's over. You heard the messaging. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah. What does this resonate with you at all? And where are you? You know, you're going to create something today for some reason, whatever it is, some brand new app. I did hear from several people. I do actually have some interesting people potentially to talk to. So
it's not a homogeneous group. I mean, everybody has different goals and desires and things they're working on. And there's not going to be a single viewpoint, but I think it'd be interesting to hear some of the viewpoints. And we'll help Paul. Just let me know, and we'll arrange to get on and all that stuff.
Okay, I think that'd be kind
of
cool.
We could do one of the ways we can do it is with like a Google Hangouts because that'll give us, I think, 8 voices we could mix in with yours.
Is there a store app for that? Because I'm not sure if these guys are going to be super interesting.
Google what?
Well, because I don't. What I want to do is keep your channels discreet and then have third channel. So we'd have to figure out a way to get a number of people on one. We could do it with Skype, I guess. Anyway, yeah, let's do it.
I'm curious. I mean, I'm obviously not a full-time developer. I don't have anything, you know. I look at the world and I think to myself, if I were doing an app today, I would choose PWA, almost certainly, unless there was some special requirement that made that impossible, like an arcade game or something or whatever. On the mobile app side, if I was just interested in mobile, which I think is increasingly a slightly antiquated viewpoint, I might look at something like Flutter. You know, and I look at what Microsoft did with Xamarin, and this is a topic I don't know enough about, to be honest, but I do kind of wonder whether that technology could be folded into the platform in such a way that you could create a Windows 10 app where your other targets could be mobile platforms, you know, that would obviously be a slightly different thing on those platforms, I guess, but it seems like just targeting Windows is not a dead end, but a lesser opportunity for many developers, you know, and that opening it up in that way, essentially doing to UWP what I guess Google did to Flutter by making it something that can run on multiple platforms and be native.
Mm-hmm. You could get maybe Mahedi. I know he doesn't like to be in public.
He doesn't like,
but...
yeah. He'd have to appear as a shadow with his voice altered. Like,
he's very shy. Yeah.
Well, Mr. Wallace,
he would be great though, right? I mean,
he would be great. Yep.
Yeah, he's perfect. Mr. Tweetin.
I'll ask him. I'll talk to him.
Yeah, and you know him.
He's busy short term with finals and whatnot. But
he's a student?
Yeah.
How cute.
He's a little one.
He's a youngin'.
He's young, right? Yeah.
Mary Jo's all excited. There's a new server build in town. Woo! Woo!
Although not that interesting also.
do they call the servers Redstone or Jellystone or what are they?
So they're technically Redstone, but this is super confusing. So they're doing simultaneous test builds of the long-term servicing channel version of server, which is Windows Server 2019. That's the on-premises one. And they're doing test builds of what we think is going to be called Windows Server 1809. They don't really use Redstone 5. That's more like a client designation. But they're all synced up together, right? So those three things, Server 2019, Server 1809, and Redstone 5 client will all come out together, we think, in October.
Got it.
Yeah. So they also are up to build 17677 with server. And this one also, not a ton of new features. There's some tweaks they're doing around performance history and storage spaces direct. And they're doing some things to make Windows Server Core even smaller in this build. So there's a couple tweaks there. But otherwise, it's kind of fixes, updates. We want you to test this and you know, do an in-place upgrade so we can see how that works. Check your applications for compatibility so we can make sure that your server applications are staying compatible. And that's kind of where they're at with server.
Okay.
Yeah, nothing big. Nothing that controversial.
That's good. That's good, good, good.
Server.
let's take a little break. We have mobile and Xbox still to come. Picks as well, and I know Mary Jo's working on her beer.
I am.
As we speak.
The wine slushy pick of the week.
Not brewing beer.
The wine slushy of the week.
Guys, I made a wine slushy yesterday.
Oh,
and?
It was a delight. I put watermelon in it. It was fantastic.
What kind of wine?
I just have one thing to say. You're welcome.
So you freeze the wine in ice cube trays?
Yeah. Yeah, and then I froze a bottle of rosé, and then I put it in the blender with some watermelon and just swirled it around, and it was a delight.
You probably need a Vitamix or something pretty powerful to mix those cubes up. Slushy.
We're going to be wandering around like the Belus this summer. It's just going to be wine slushies everywhere.
Why do we keep hearing the blender sound coming out of the throat home? All day.
Wine slushies don't make themselves.
Slushies. So just to be clear, freeze the rosé in ice cube trays.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could even freeze it in a dish with, you know, like a baking dish, 13 by 9.
I guess, but again, your blender, you got to make, I mean, I think probably is smaller.
You need a Serious, yeah. What do you say, a Vitamix blender?
Vitamix would do it. We have a Vitamix.
Yeah, you need some.
Just a
wood chipper
it
from
so
Fargo would work probably pretty well.
Because you want, and you want to really, you don't want to, the problem with the Vitamix is it gets hot. You can actually make hot soup with a Vitamix because it gets so hot. You don't want to melt it.
Have you ever done the thing where you have like a white wine or a rosé and it's warm and you want to get it cold quickly, so you stick it in the freezer and then you kind of forget about it.
Yeah.
And it kind of slushes over a little bit.
Yeah.
To me, that's like the filet mignon of wine, you know? When it's hot out, you want like a cold wine. It's good. I love it like that.
See, I don't like filet mignon. So I'm trying to figure out.
The lobster, the Cadillac of cars.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. It's the Cadillac of cars, the Cadillac of slushies. I like the idea of putting a little watermelon in.
It was good.
That's like, now you're getting into sangria territory, though.
Yeah, sangria territory.
No, it didn't make it too sweet. It just lightened it up a little.
Yeah.
That was all.
It's the Cadillac of slushies, my friends. Our show today brought to you by Moogsoft. If you're in the IT business, you know how jangly it can get when all those alerts are going off. And usually those alerts, you know, there's five from the same thing. You get it over and over again. Every once in a while, I just get a ton of alerts from which one is it? I can't remember. One of our server, probably our Redis server, will just go crazy. Heroku, every once in a while, will do that too, and I just get 500 alerts all at once, and that's useless, right? It's like almost paralyzing because it's too much. It's overkill. Moogsoft knows how it is when you're getting all those alerts. Your tickets are. Alerts are lighting up your monitor like a Christmas tree, and you just can't be productive. You're just stressed out. That's why they've created Moogsoft AI Ops. No mere mortal can analyze all these alerts and respond to these tickets. You need Moogsoft AI Ops. It's an algorithmic IT ops platform that reduces your IT alerts and tickets, but by up to 99%. Now, I know you know one way to do it is just turn them all off, but no, this does not do this. It consolidates alerts. It consolidates alerts. So you're still getting actionable alerts on everything that you need, you know, but what they do is they correlate events into actionable work items. They call them situations. You focus on tackling the stuff that matters, and you don't get bugged by all these extra meaningless alerts. And it's great because it'll integrate with all your IT tools, whatever you use. It's patented technology. So this is where you got to go to get it. Actually, you know who's using it? We have a testimonial from a company called HCL Technologies. You might know their award-winning Dry Ice platform. They're a managed global IT managed service provider. And the Dry Ice platform integrates Moogsoft's AI Ops as the event management layer. Now, this is from HCL Technologies. They say it helps their clients streamline operational workflows, reduce time in the detect-to-correct life cycle of incident tickets. They have experienced in real-world numbers a 33% reduction in mean time to restore. That's a lot faster. It means they can support more customers with service quality, keeping operational costs low and efficiency high. Moogsoft AI Ops. I want you to know more about it. If you're the IT person, you know you want to know more about it. So get your boss to go to Moog, or you go and get a demo at moogsoft.com. Show the boss. Reduce your IT alerts and tickets by up to 99% right now and still be more effective. Of course, be more effective. Moogsoft.com to get a demo. Moog, M-O-O. See the cow logo? M-O-O, like a cow, moo. But the guy also liked synthesizers, so it's Moog. It's a long story. He couldn't get the Moog.com. He wanted Moog.com. So he got Moogsoft.com. Moogsoft.com. Get yourself a demo. And we thank Moogsoft. They're great guys. Really nice for their support of Windows Weekly. Really? Paul, somebody's got to pay for all those slushies.
My daughter just locked me in my office.
What? Why is the lock on the outside of the door?
Right. That's because it's a zoo.
It's not a. Yes, exactly. Exactly. Oh, Virgil's saying you should make a wine granita, Sicilian style. Ooh. 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 All right, moving right along to mobile. Microsoft allegedly, allegedly, we don't want to commit. Allegedly improving To Do. What is To Do this? What is this? Is this the Wunder list that they got? What is this?
Yeah, I think that is. Isn't this the new Wunder list basically?
Yep.
And it is. They were supposed to bring in features from Sunrise, and the problem is this thing's never really been updated. It's kind of sat there unchanged. Mm-hmm. And so recently the Office support website was updated to indicate that they're working on list sharing. So it's a kind of a new feature that's finally coming. And Brad did a little digging around and found out actually there's some leadership occurring over there. Like there are people working on it now. So
there's
Marcus
leadership
Ash
over there.
Yeah. Who I think of as the Baba Booey of Microsoft is heading up this team. Laura Butler, our friend, is working on this as well. That's kind of cool. She's from OneNote. So apparently, if you've been kind of wondering what's going on there, and a lot of people have, I mean, in the sense that I consider myself to be the patron saint of PWAs. Brad is the patron saint of Microsoft To Do for some reason. I guess you get to pick the battles you're interested in or whatever. But he's been really bugging them to kind of fix this thing because it's just sat there like unchanged. Like they kind of announced it. They dropped everything else and they never improved it. So apparently that's changing. So.
So, you know, what's interesting that he found. So Marcus Ash used to be, I don't know what his exact title was, but he was working on Cortana, right? And if you look at his Twitter profile right now, he is now general manager for tasks at Microsoft. Tasks.
Yeah.
So remember that interview I did recently with Javier Soltero, who is the head of Cortana now? He was talking about how the new goal for Cortana is to build it into everything, right? Build its intelligence into Outlook and into various apps and services. So this change in what Marcus Ash is doing makes a lot of sense because it would make a lot of sense to have Cortana be your guide in completing tasks and your to-do list and all that, right? Yeah. That to me is like, there's a good use for Cortana.
You know what also makes sense is if they had one to-do service on the back end and it surfaced itself everywhere in Outlook.com and Outlook on the web and Outlook 2016 or whatever the app's going to be in Calendar, perhaps in Windows 10 or the to-do app or whatever. And tasks, you know, if you're familiar with this kind of notion of to-do or whatever, you know, depending on the Microsoft product or service you're using, they've actually used the name tasks before. I believe that's what they call it in Outlook.com, for example.
Yeah, they do. Yep.
So anyway, maybe they are working toward this kind of consolidation. I hope so.
It would be good.
Yeah.
Because they still have Planner also, right? Which is kind of another to-do thing, isn't it?
For teams and for organizations. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know about you guys, but I don't really use To Do apps. I've tried to use To Do list and To Do
at all.
I feel like my email is my To Do list.
I use my calendar. Much.
We're a bad example, though. We don't actually work for a living, or you know, we're not.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, Bill Burr observed,
it's not completely facetious when I say that. I mean, there are people like my wife who has, you know, 50, 60, 100 tasks she has to do.
Yeah.
You know, in a variety. And that's a lot of, that's actually probably more normal.
It requires a certain amount of acumen and a responsibility that I think Mary Jo and I simply do not have.
Well, you're writers. I'm in our biz, I don't have a to-do list. My to-do list is try to show up on time.
Yeah.
And do whatever happens next.
Yeah.
So the
joke
normal.
Is if you can do the job in your pajamas, it's probably not that hard of a job.
Yeah. But I know people who need, you know, and students. Students are a good example. People who have a lot of irons in the fire. We barely have a fire.
Well, you know what, though? Before the electronic stuff happened, I used to get that little calendar book from your bank. You know, you got it every December or whatever for the next year. And I would write stuff in, you had contacts in there, obviously, and, calendar items or, you know, meetings, whatever. I mean, to me, those are very similar, if not identical, to a lot of to-dos, you know, that you have something that has to get done on or by a certain date. And I to me, even if I was a student, because I was at the, you know, at one time, obviously, like that's how I think. And that works for me. The notion of adding yet another tool and then evaluating the competing options and just adding to the burden of the things I must maintain across multiple devices is just not of interest to me.
Yeah.
To me, it's just more stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of people spend. I have noticed this. And by the way, I have taken the Franklin Planner class, you know, the 3-day whatever it is class.
Wow.
I have taken Dave Allen's Getting Things Done class. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have devoted many, many, many hours to. I remember in college making a big giant poster board with thumbtacks for every 15-minute segment of my week.
Yikes.
None of which. But what I learned was you spend far more time on the to-do list than you do doing things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes. Yes.
And I think there's a certain personality trait geeks have that they're really interested in systems, right?
Yeah, they overthink things.
It's like 43 folders. It's like, you know, it's the getting things done. They love it because it, you know, you have go to the office supply store. All right, good. That's a good start.
Leo, buying folders with multiple colors.
Yeah.
You can order. I mean, this is the best.
Yeah.
I completely understand this. It was the best part about going back to school every year.
But you get nothing done.
Buying all that stuff.
Yeah, but you get nothing
done. No, but you organize it and then it's.
And I'm the worst procrastinator in the world. I mean, one of the reasons I'm not doing something that requires a to-do list is because I can't.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
I feel
I'm
like
just
I could
not a list
contend
person.
With you for that title.
Yeah.
Lists are good. Yeah. If you need, you know, there are people who, I mean, like I said, we're just not the people who need them.
Yeah.
So we're probably the wrong people to judge.
We might be the people who need them. We just don't do it. I mean, my mother used to always tell me, you know, she'd say, you don't remember anything. You need to write, you need to make lists.
You may be more than me. I've carefully cultivated my life not to ever need a to-do list.
I stopped calling my mother because it's just not
Mom.
On the list.
Mom.
I'll show her.
Well, there are honeydew. We actually, Lisa is big on this. She just mailed me our punch list for the house. I have not opened that email.
Mm-hmm. And you may never do it.
Right, because what you can see is the closing down of your summer.
Yeah.
You know, you can understand the lack of free time you will now have on weekends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't mind. If I need to go to the office supply store, I'll be glad to do it.
I bet the people who like to-do lists like to be scheduled in their lives, like even on weekends, right? Because one of the big conversations I have with Stephanie, I'll say something like, what's happening this coming weekend? And she'll say, actually, nothing. And it's good. Do not you dare book
love
anything.
That.
I love that notion of just open free time. Anything could happen.
Having said that, technology does lend itself well to kind of, in some ways, getting rid of them. You mentioned you use your calendar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Calendars are really to-do lists.
They are.
Yeah. Right. Of a different kind. Yeah.
And they'll give you alerts and notices and keep, you know, what you need to do.
I just turn those off because that's annoying. And then, and then there's a sense of accomplishment to that, you know.
Right. I use it's unfortunately iOS only. I wish it were available on Android. There's a very good Android, iOS, Mac, and Windows to-do list program called Task Aid that Microsoft will probably buy after they give up on Wunderlist. Yeah. but it's free and it's really good. TASKADE. Highly recommend it. It's got a Chrome plugin. That's how it does the desktop. But I use one on iOS that is really not a to-do list. It's more like a way of dumping things for later handling. And it's got a watch complication. So I can, and it takes speech. So I just, whenever somebody says, don't forget, or, hey, you promised, or I say, oh, I'll make sure to get you that, I just do it into my watch, and then it dumps it into a pile. And at the end of the day, on my phone or a tablet, I can process it. It's not a to-do list exactly. It's just a list of things I agreed to do. Kind of.
I don't like this stuff. You know, Mary Jo is not a big fan of Conversation View, right, in Outlook.com or Outlook, whatever. Is also not a big fan, I believe, of Focused Inbox, which is another attempt to kind of overthink things. I use Google Inbox, which has some pluses and minuses compared to regular Gmail. But one of the things they've done for a while is they will surface emails to the top where in the past – or maybe it sort of suggests it's waiting for a response or something, and I've never responded. Mm. And my God, do I hate that. I hate it. There is just a nagginess to it that I do not appreciate, you know?
Yeah.
I want I want email to be, you know, the stack, you know,
sequential,
first in, last out, you know, whatever.
Yep. Same.
I don't want a thing, an AI construct, whatever it is, overthinking my email. It's a simple list of things, you know.
That's like Cortana reminders. Have you ever had those pop up? It's like you said
they're
someone
so random.
That you were going to do this by this time. And sometimes you just say it casually.
You know who talks like that? My teenager. You said.
You said.
You're like, oh, like it's like seriously, I hate it.
I don't like it. I thought I was going to like that feature, but so far I have not.
This is so funny. I think part of this is why we got into this business, because we didn't want anybody to tell us what to do.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, we're all basically self-employed.
Yeah.
Don't want anybody to tell us what to do. So we're the wrong people to. But what's interesting is all three of us have a non-traditional to-do list in effect. Mary Jo uses email. Mm-hmm. Paul uses a calendar. Yeah. I use this Drafts app. So we are keeping track of our obligations. That's really all you need to do.
No, for sure. I remind myself every first of the month to write that Games of the Gold post. I have things in my calendar, like on this day, check back with this credit card thing to make sure this thing was processed, whatever it is. Like I do have things I have to do.
This is where technology is great, because you can find a tool that will fit your workflow. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem with saying, oh, we've got Microsoft To-Do. I mean, I guess for some people that's a tool, but it's not for everybody by any means. And it doesn't have to be. Technology does it for
you. I mean, look, I hope they get it right. Don't get me wrong. But the notion of waiting on Microsoft to figure out a mobile app that's going to help you get things done at some indeterminate point in the future is its own form of weird irony. Yeah. You know, like
it's on their list. It's on their to-do list.
It's on someone's list.
Yeah.
Put it on my list. Yep.
You know, the thing I like about what they've been doing with things like Conversation View and Focused Inbox is they've made them optional, right? And I just complained last week on Twitter. I'm like, guys, you made these options, but why every time I set up a new PC have you ignored the option that I chose and you're trying to make me try it again, right?
So Mary Jo,
I don't want Conversation View.
About Windows 10, and the subtext of the book is, why are some settings synced and not others?
Right. Yeah.
You know, there's no answer to the why question. All we can do is point to the ones that are and the ones that aren't, you know.
Yeah.
When you sign in, one of the weird things about Windows 10 is the Edge syncing requires you to sign into the system with your Microsoft account. Mm-hmm. If you don't do that, you can't sync anything. If you do that, God knows what syncs, because it's in some weird interface and settings, and you need someone like Raphael to go dig around and figure out what it is that syncs, and it's not everything. And
that's not helpful.
It's unbelievable.
It's more
because the option you get is, do you want to sync your settings across PCs? You say yes. You assume that means all. Like it doesn't say, do you want to sync some settings, right? It says settings.
I agree. I have confusing issues that other people don't have, but you know, one thing that I get to experience every once in a while is I'll open a new Lenovo laptop, sign in. It's got some Lenovo desktop wallpaper, and it's just applied to every one of my computers. And it's like,
that happens to me every time. I hate that.
Me too. Same.
It's the worst.
That's a first world problem.
I know. I want to be really. I know. It's my the private hell I've created for myself. I get it, but it's just, it doesn't. There's no intelligence to it. It doesn't come up and say, like, I didn't say I wanted to sync. Mm-hmm. It's that my syncing of settings is a setting that syncs. Like just by signing in, that has happened. It never asked me. I signed in. I must want to sync settings, right?
Yeah. That isn't good.
The only question is which circle of hell I live in. It's just, it is kind of unbelievable.
Ebooks. Oh, this is interesting. What is this? Microsoft Edge has ebooks.
Yeah. So on Windows 10, Microsoft Edge has an ebook capability, right? So the books come from the store. They're managed in Edge. Edge is a really good reader. This is one of those things. I mean, you know, I complain about Edge, but the truth is, especially in the latest version, Microsoft has done a really good job of making this a general purpose reader application. And it works with PDF files, EPUBs, ebooks, which are protected EPUBs, and then also with the web, of course. And each of those
I really like this because I don't have to download a separate reader, which really is nice.
Yeah. There's actually, I think I mentioned this, but if I didn't, there's some really advanced functionality in there. Three of the types of documents I just mentioned have a grammar tools feature where you can download, you have to download it, and then it will help you learn how to read. So if you don't read very well, you have dyslexia, whatever, there's actually stuff built into the browser that will help you with that.
That's cool.
It's actually really cool.
That's cool.
So we have ebooks in Windows 10. Fantastic. Who wants to read a book on a computer? That's ridiculous. So obviously getting it down to a mobile device makes tons of sense. Ever since Microsoft Edge debuted on iOS and Android last fall, there's been a little coming soon kind of thing in there with the ebook part of it. And as of this week, that functionality is now available. It's a little basic, but it's there for iOS only, I think. I don't believe it's happened yet on Android, but it probably will any day now. And they're going to improve it over time, of course. The nature of iOS is that you'll never be able to browse the store from that device, right? You'll have to do it from your computer. That's a little ponderous. But then again, you do that in the Microsoft Store in Windows 10, so I can't imagine this coming to Android either. But the point here is if you're out in the world and you want to keep reading the book you're reading or whatever, the phone is where you want it. So it's good that they're bringing it there.
I agree. Let's see. Xbox. All right, Mary Jo, you can take a break now if you'd like.
All right. Maybe I'm going to go make some wine slushies.
Go make some slushies.
Yeah. Be back.
Yep.
Make something green just so it looks good with Xbox. At least we can have a thematic thing.
Go update your not to do list.
Yeah, the not to do.
things not to do. Play State of Decay.
To do over the weekend.
Yeah.
Prestige.
Yeah. Prestige, yes.
Mary Jo, I'll try to go through this quickly. I know this is terrible.
Do it. Come on. Just do it.
So. State of Decay 2 is a zombie survival game that came out last year. Last week. It is a Xbox Play Anywhere title, meaning that if you buy it on Xbox, it will play on Windows 10 and vice versa. That's cool. They announced, I think it was less than a week, but let's say within the week, that this game had surpassed 1 million active users fairly quickly, indicating some level of success, right? And I looked at that and I thought, you know, this is maybe the perfect example of Microsoft doesn't want to explain how many consoles it sold because that number is bad, but they're always looking for these other things that suggest success. And to me, they're kind of squishy numbers like active hours on Xbox Live or, you know, whatever the number might be. But 1 million users of an individual game, you know, is interesting. One of the big complaints about Xbox and Microsoft's video game strategy is that they don't have any true exclusives. I would quibble with that, but this game is what I would call platform exclusive. It obviously runs on Windows and on Xbox, but a million users within the first week is great. You know, so I mean, I think this is a legit, reasonable, good milestone for a game. So that's cool. Xbox Game Pass is getting 6 new games in June. Actually, I'll talk about that next week, since next week we'll be doing a game. We call it Games with Gold mention anyway, and then PUBG. I have so little respect for PUBG. It's hard for me to even write about it. But they've doubled the number of maps in the game from 1 to 2. So 50% more games, more game maps, more maps, I should say, on Xbox One. So that's there. And then the biggest news of the week in Xbox is that the Xbox 360 got its first update since, I want to say, March 2016, which is an interesting coincidence. Because that is the last time that my daughter's iPhone was backed up to the cloud. March 2016. Mm. Weird. Anywho, there is no new feature. There's nothing to look at. It was just bug fixes and, you know, whatever. It didn't even address a vulnerability or anything. It's just like random 26 months later, we're updating this thing for some reason. So much like Windows 10, your console may take a slightly longer time booting the next time you turn it on. And then it will just go back to normal.
Tip of the week, Mr. Paul Theron.
Oh, bad news, Leo. It's an Xbox tip.
I'll be back.
It seems like almost every week there's some kind of new sale on the Xbox One. And for the first couple weeks of June, there are two alternate sales. You buy an Xbox One X, I think through June 3rd was the date, and you get a free copy of State of Decay 2. If you buy it for the week after that, you'll get a free copy of Red Dead Redemption, which, Ooh. By the way, is not an Xbox One game, but it has been remastered for the Xbox One X. So you actually get
like a 360 game, wasn't it?
Yeah, they actually remastered it to take advantage of the new console. So that's actually kind of cool.
That's a fun
game. If you already own the
game,
yeah, you'll get that automatically. So that's kind of neat.
That's it, huh? What is with the brevity? You got.
I'm sorry.
And now the app pick of the week.
Actually, I'll just mention as a tip that's almost an app pick. Chrome 67 came out today.
Yes.
On Windows, yes. Mac, and Linux. I haven't tested this on Mac, but I want to because I'm curious about this. You need to enable some flags. I mentioned them in the comments to my post. But when you do that, what you get on Windows, at least, is a Chrome OS-like experience for PWAs, where if you go to mobile.twitter.com or app.starbucks.com or whatever the flipboard.in, or I can't remember that exact address, you don't get a prompt. That should happen. It doesn't happen yet. But you'll get, you know, when you open the Chrome menu, it actually says install name of app. In the past, what you could do on Windows was go down there, and I think it's like more tools. I think it says create shortcut. And when you do that, if you select open like a window, it loses the browser Chrome, and it looks a little bit like a native application. So the way that the install app thing changes that behavior is, A, it is an app. It has offline capabilities if the app supports it. It will color itself to match the app. So the title bar potentially could be the color, you know, whatever the main color is of the app itself. And it just takes on kind of more of a native look and feel. So I was really excited to kind of test this. It's not, like I said, it's not available by default. You won't see this install feature I just mentioned. You still have to set some flags. So it's something I think in a future version, they're just going to enable by default. But there's a little prompt you can see on screen if you're watching this.
Why would you ever install Trivago?
Because it was the only PWA I didn't install yet. And I just wanted to see what
so
it was.
So the flags in the comments, you have to read the comments, but the flags.
Yeah, go to the standard comments. Sorry, scroll back up to the top. Yeah. There it is, right?
Yeah. Navigate to Chrome flags and search for PWA. Enable it.
Basically, you want to, go to the Chrome flags thing and search for both PWA and banner. And when you do that, you'll see the available options.
Okay.
And that turns it on fully. Well, you don't get the pop-up automatically. Like I said, you have to go to the menu, but they're kind of making it happen over time.
This is very exciting. Thank you for tipping me off. So you enable PWA full code cache, you enable desktop PWAs, and then enable this desktop PWA link capturing.
Mm-hmm. I did all three, and then enable app banners, and then you'll get the. It's basically like Chrome OS, the way Chrome OS handles PWAs now. Now, here's the thing: you probably know this, Leo. On the Mac, that create shortcut functionality that's been on Windows for a long time is not available in Chrome for the Mac. Google says that this should be available. So, if you enable those flags on the Mac, you should be able to. I haven't tested this, but. If not today, then someday soon, and get that same kind of functionality on the Mac as well.
I'm enabling on the Mac. I've just enabled on Windows. This is very cool. And now I have to go to Trivago, huh?
No, I would go to like app.starbucks.com or something.
Oh, okay.
Mobile.twitter.com.
App.starbucks.
All right, so you were prompted to reboot, and you did.
Yep, relaunched.
And then you're doing this on the Mac, right?
On Windows. Oh, let me do it on the Mac. I can do it on the Mac in front of everybody.
I'm really curious. The way this will look is when you bring down the menu, between Find and More Tools, there will be an install option, if it works.
So let me first search for PWA.
Yeah, so enable all those.
All three of these.
You might not need all three. I have been enabling all three.
And then I'm going to – so let's relaunch there. And then I'm going to go back to flags and search for ad banner. What was it? App banner.
App banners. Yeah, app banner.
Banner. And I'm going to turn on that. And experimental app banners too, you think?
That one I don't know, but I would enable that.
Why not enable them all? I am going to not do the bypass user engagement because that's for developers. Yeah. And now if I go to – let's drive m.twitter.com.
Mm-hmm. Go to the Chrome menu.
Chrome menu.
And it says create shortcut. That's interesting. So try this.
I don't remember that.
Well, that's the
install app. Now I'm getting the pop-up. Yep.
That's it. Yeah. So it says install app.
I'll put it on my desktop so I actually
I don't believe this ever worked before on the Mac. I mean, I'm not a Mac user, obviously, but my understanding was this: these Chrome shortcut things never worked on the Mac before.
Oh, there it is, Twitter Lite.
Now, that should run in its own window.
Oh, my God. Oh, yep. My God. I'll close Chrome. Mm-hmm. Right? It's not part of... Oh, it is part of Chrome. Oh, well.
Okay, so it's not as sophisticated on the Mac, but at least it kind of works, you know? It's,
yeah, I mean, well, Chrome apps were always like that. If Chrome wasn't open, you wouldn't...
Okay.
So this
okay.
is this is the mobile Twitter as a PWA.
Yeah.
Nice. Look at that. Wow. Okay, so this is not... Discoverability is very low.
Yeah, so in the future, you'll see that install app thing that you saw should
from
be
now,
able to autopilot.
From now on, this is just...
Well, yeah, so if you've done this on Android, like some sites, some apps or whatever, for some reason, do pop up something. It actually kind of slides up from the bottom or whatever. And it says, hey, you can install this to your home screen. Other apps do what you just did, which is you have to go to the menu and look for it.
So this is a React-based version of Y Combinator's headline news, Hacker News, rather. So create shorter.
Now, see, that just says create shortcut, but that's the – so this is not a PWA, but it will still work like one, right? It will have its own window. I don't believe – I could be wrong. Well, that just opened in a tab.
It just opened in a tab, yeah.
Yeah, so that never worked in the – try app.starbucks.com.
Yeah.
All right. I'm just curious if the language changes in the menu. Because it shouldn't say create shortcut. It should say install Starbucks or something.
No, create shortcut.
Yeah. Yeah, but when you do that, you should see
install. No, still no, not this one. But mobile Twitter did, didn't it?
Yeah, but I got Starbucks to work.
Yeah. I mean, it puts it in this Chrome apps folder automatically.
Yeah, yeah. And that's how that works on Windows.
But it
right?
opens as a tab. It doesn't.
So what is.
So something's missing.
No, I also. I'm sorry. I also get create shortcut. So what was the Trivago one? Trivago.in. Try that. I don't know.
Oh, I really don't want. I don't want this the Trivago is... man in my computer. He's so weird. Now that Mary Jo has a TV, she knows what we're talking about.
Okay. I kind of know. Yeah, I'm like
Trivago. Oh, it says install.
There you go.
So it might be something to do with the way the app is.
It's the manifest or something. Yep. There you go.
All right.
So
now let's. Let's close this.
When I think about hotels, obviously I think of something that has hotels in the word, like Trivago.
I think wasn't it created though by like hotels.com and all those people. So there it is.
Oh,
so it's a standalone window. Mm-hmm. Its name is Trivago. It has the basic Mac
you get an icon in the dock. You could
you
possibly Yeah, I mean, on Windows, you could. I don't know how Trivago works, but
let's see.
Should be notification. You could have notification support. Yada yada yada.
Yeah. So this is. Let me. One more thing. Let's close Chrome. Mm-hmm. See what happens.
I believe a Chrome runs in the background.
Yeah, it launches Chrome. It's just like a Chrome app. Yeah. So Chrome, the helpers obviously are built into Chrome.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Very interesting.
This is cool, right? I mean, this is something that will work identically or nearly identically on Windows and the Mac.
Yeah. Nice.
And anything, Linux, whatever. It's good.
Very exciting. Cool.
Well, that's way better than my actual app pick. no, actually, this is kind of interesting. So I was talking to Andrew yesterday, and he asked me if I would refer to him as handsome Andrew Zarian.
He's handsome. He's a handsome
He's
man.
A good-looking guy.
Yeah.
He recommended something that I think is going to be truly useful for a lot of people. And I'm testing one of these things right now. The one I'm testing is called AirText. And what it is a way to send and receive text messages on your Windows 10 or Windows computer and on the Mac, by the way, using your Android phone in the background. And so the reason this works on Android is that you can run background processes on Android. Like you can't really do that on iOS as a third party. So they can intercept text messages for you. And do this thing. You know, it's the functionality that Microsoft's trying to build into Windows 10, except unlike the stuff Microsoft's doing, this works instantaneously. It's excellent. And I've been testing it only since yesterday, so I don't have a lot of data. But my own testing, I've actually gotten the message on my computer before my phone issued a notification. Like, it's really fast.
Wow.
So that's called AirText. There's a second one that somebody on Twitter recommended to me called Mighty Text.
Yeah, this one's been around for ages. I've used this for years.
Okay, so I've never seen this one, but it looks very similar, obviously.
This is not free, unfortunately.
Yeah, actually, AirText has a free version. Yeah, you can pay for it. I don't recall what the the differences were. But I assume these work the same way, right? There's some kind of a, you give it permission to access your text messages. It intercepts text messages on your behalf.
Right.
As a background processor on the phone. But, I found, like I think I said recently, the ability to speak into the microphone on my phone and kind of send text messages that way to be very useful. But as a writer or somebody who uses a computer all day long, even more useful is the ability to actually type in a real keyboard and have it go out over the phone. So very useful.
Absolutely. It's the thing that keeps me on Google's Hangouts, even though Google really doesn't want me there. Is I have a desktop app, you know, as a Chrome extension.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you're an Apple guy, I mean, obviously the Mac has this iMessage integration thing that works like this.
It's Apple only. It doesn't work on
Apple. Yeah. So this, I don't know, MightyText, I don't know if it's Mac too. AirText is Mac too. So if you're a Windows or a Mac user and you use an Android phone and you want that kind of functionality, these are things to investigate.
MightyText is also Mac.
Okay.
Enterprise pick of the week, Mary Jo Foley.
I don't know how I missed this one, guys. It was at Build, but I just saw this listed recently. It's called Azure Blockchain Workbench. And, you know, Microsoft's been really big in backing blockchain and doing work around templates for blockchain and working with the different blockchain consortiums. Now they have this thing called Azure Blockchain Workbench. It's in public preview as of this month. And it's a bunch of services, Azure services and tools that are meant to help people create and deploy blockchain apps. So what it does is it connects your Azure services to backend blockchain service of your choice and then lets you bring in things like Azure Active Directory and other Azure services to make it easier for you to build blockchain apps. You may wonder, who is building blockchain apps?
Yep. Apparently our sponsor.
Surprisingly, there are some big customers like 3M and Nestle and other big conglomerates and banks that have actually been dabbling a lot in using blockchain as a distributed ledger technology on the back end. And so they've been wanting to build apps. Microsoft's tagline is you can build blockchain apps in days, not months.
Chocolate blockchain. N-E-S-T-L-E-S. Nestle's got the blockchain stuff. I like it.
Yeah. And you can go test it now. To find it, just go to Microsoft. The easiest way is azure.microsoft.com and then look under products and you can find a whole list of all the services they have, services and products. And one of them is Azure Blockchain Workbench.
If you think of blockchain as just a secure distributed ledger,
right?
Then you
nothing
can see,
to do with crypto.
Nothing
currency.
To do with cryptocurrency, but just
can I little, mine blockchain?
Well, sort of. There's proof
can
of work.
I mine a blockchain workbench.
Proof of work involved, but you could see a lot of applications for it if you just don't get tied into the Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. And enterprise pick number two.
Okay, this is we're throwing Windows Phone users a bone because we're always joking about Windows Phone on this show, and we shouldn't because we know a lot of our listeners are still using Windows Phone.
No, we don't. Really?
Yeah, they are. We see them at all our meetups.
Come on, Mary Jo. Now they're going to think they're people.
Yeah. So, guys,
here's the good news.
I don't know. If
are you ready?
Here's
for the
good
news.
News. Ready? Hold on to your hats. Microsoft said a very short time ago that suddenly they were going to pull Skype for Business and Teams apps for Windows Phone and just like make them disappear as of May 20th. Well, May 20th has come and gone and the apps are still there. The reason they're still there is Microsoft had a quiet change of heart and they've given those apps an extension. So Teams won't be removed from the store until July 20th and it won't stop working till October 20th now, which gives you a little more time. Skype for Business, they gave quite a bit longer reprieve. It's going to stay in the store until December 2019 instead of May 20th, 2018. I think this is good because Microsoft didn't give people very much heads up. And there are still people who are under support. They're validly using Windows Phone and it's being supported by Microsoft. And I think it was very disingenuous of Microsoft to just suddenly pull the rug out from under them with those apps.
disk.
On the other hand, it was Windows Phone users, so
it was Windows Phone.
Just kidding.
Your days are numbered, Windows Phone users, but they're not as numbered as they seemed.
they're numbered, but those are negative numbers.
They're not good numbers.
Going backwards.
I know. Yeah. They're not.
Yeah. All right.
So yeah, you get a little longer with Teams, and you get quite a bit longer with Skype for Business.
Basically, the governor's on the phone. You're getting a reprieve, kid, for a month.
Exactly.
The beer. Oh, this sounds so good. The beer pick of the week. I just like saying the name.
Yeah. So the name is Brewery Terreur. That's I guess I call it a spinoff of The Brewery, B-R-U-E-R-Y, which is a very famous craft brewing organization. They have a beer that's really famous called Tart of Darkness. And now they have Tart of Darkness with Currants. And this sounds weird when I'm describing it, but you got to trust me. It's very delicious.
You're going to drink it faster than you can say the name is what you're going to do.
Yeah, the name is long. Brewery Terreur, Tart of Darkness with Currants. It's a sour stout.
Sounds fabulous.
Tart of Darkness.
I know. Isn't that funny? I love it.
That's good.
This sounds delicious.
It is good. It's a sour stout. They age it in oak barrels with currants. And so it's only 6%, and it looks really dark in color. But when you taste it, you're like, wow, what is that? It's very refreshing because it's a sour, but it's a stout.
Where is this company located?
The Brewery Terreur. The brewery is Belgian in Southern California, and Brewery Terreur is in Anaheim. California.
Because we've seen the Dutch word for brewery, which has J's and X's in it. That word is not that word, but that may be Belgian something. It looks like almost French.
The brewery is in California, B-R-U-E-R-Y. It's a very famous craft beer.
So this means I may be able to get it at the local market.
Oh, yeah, I bet you could. I just had it the other day, and it was very, very tasty.
You're such a bad influence on me, Mary Jo.
I am. Sorry.
You may actually be the Antichrist.
Sorry.
I would just say it tastes as a slushy.
Ooh,
No comparison.
Really. I don't know. Frozen beer, I'm not so sure about.
It's like a wine slushy with a Brewery Terreur chaser.
Is this, though, for a stout, it might be fairly refreshing. I mean, it's not, it's not winter drink, right?
Yeah. I dare you to say that.
No, it's not like a wintery stout.
Okay.
Not a wintery stout. It's very nice.
Very nice. Yeah. I'm going to try it.
Look for it.
Look for it. And then drink it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mary Jo Foley is our beer expert. She's also a little bit of an expert in what's going on up there in Redmond. Read all about it at allaboutmicrosoft.com. And, of course, every Wednesday right here on Twit. Paul Thurrott, you'll find him at Thurrott.com. The eponymous Thurrott.com.
Yes.
And, of course, his books are at the non-eponymous leanpub.com. And together they form the fabulous Windows Weekly team. Every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. You can tune in live, watch us make the show. Sound effects not included. And actually, they are included. I'm sorry to say. We edit them out later. You can find that at twit.tv/live. If you do that, join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. A nice bunch of people in there. And
6% is not high alcohol.
That's
a baby stroller of a beer.
It's not quite sessionable, but it's almost.
It's pretty light for stouts tend to be lighter, which is the opposite of what people often.
You know, like a typical lager, American beer.
Right.
6%.
That's not bad.
Plus, it's a sour. You're not going to guzzle
before breakfast.
I should explain.
Yeah, you're not going to guzzle a sour. You're not going to let me down like a gallon of this, right?
Paul and Mary Jo are responding to the chat room.
Sorry.
It's not merely that Paul's hearing voices in his head.
Yes. Although there is some element of that, by the way. I fight that demon every day.
You want Paul to respond to you as if you're a voice in his head, go to irc.twit.tv.
app.thurrott.com.
You can also... Hey, we should have app.thurrott.com. Are you going to do that?
Oh, I hope not. I don't know.
I want to do a Twit... PWA. That's my goal. That's why taking all these programming classes. Yep. Mm-hmm. It's my end of the yellow brick road, way down there.
That sounds good. Yep.
I think about that.
Yeah. Let's see. You can also get the show on demand, so you don't have to watch it live. You can go to twit.tv/WW or wherever you get your podcasts, including YouTube, and find the show there. Subscribe. That way you'll get it every week. You won't miss a single one. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us in Windows Weekly, and we will see you next week. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. Bye-bye.